Thank you very much for that. That was absolutely beautiful. Kind of fits in with what I'm going to talk about a little bit today. We just went through the feast a couple of months ago, and one of the great lessons we're supposed to learn from the feast is that we're supposed to learn to fear God. We're supposed to learn to fear God, but you know, with the right type of fear. There is a fear that we have of God that does make us quake in our boots and should make us quake in our boots. But you know, as we get to know God more and see who He really is, that fear should start turning to awe and wonder about how awesome our God truly is. And we do things not because we fear God, but because how great God is, how wonderful He is, what love He has towards us. That's what we learn as we get to know Him more and more. And as I mentioned during the feast, it's one of the lessons that we're told we're supposed to learn about the feast in Deuteronomy 14:23, which we won't turn there, but it tells us that that's one of the reasons for the feast, to have that right fear for God. You know, do we limit God? In our mind, do we picture Him as a physical thing? You know, Israel always wanted to change God from a spiritual being into a physical being. They always wanted to have idols like the nations around them. You know, have snakes or a golden calf. They wanted to change God into that physical God. That's one reason God doesn't want us to have idols. It's because we change Him from the spiritual realm down to a physical realm, from the spiritual world to a physical world, and we limit Him then. And that's how we can limit God. It's easy to fall into the trap of just thinking God is just a larger human than we are, a bigger human than we are, a smarter human than we are, more intelligent. You know, just that's because we as humans think of things as physical. Color, size, width, height, weight. We try to picture everything as physical things. But God is not physical, He's spiritual. So we need to expand our minds to think beyond the physical and into the spiritual realm. Ask yourself, how great is your God? He truly is limitless, but we do tend to limit Him. So I would like to look today at the greatness of God and how great He truly is. How great He truly is. God created everything. At one time, there was no physical universe at all. There was just God and spirit beings. You know, that reminds me of a joke which I've heard a few times, and maybe you have too. It goes like this. One day, a group of scientists got together and decided that man had come a long way and no longer really needed God. So they picked one scientist to go up to God and tell him that he was no longer needed to have him around. So they picked one scientist to go up to God. He walked up to God and he said, God, we've decided with all of our technology and all of our knowledge that mankind has got on this earth that we no longer need you. You know, it's time for you to just get lost. Go away. You know, and God's a very caring being, and he said, patiently listened to the man. After the man was done talking to God, God said, very well, let's say we have a man-making contest. Let's say we have a man-making contest, to which the scientist said, well, great, we can do that, no problem. But God added, we're going to do it just like in the days of Noah, or Adam. Just like in the days of Adam. So the scientist says, oh, that's no problem either. I can do this. So he reaches down to the dirt, to the ground, picks up a lump of dirt, and God looks at him and shakes his finger. Says, no, 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 no. You get your own dirt. You get your own dirt. So let's go ahead and start with that original dirt. Let's turn to Genesis 1:1. Genesis 1:1 is talking about a beginning. a beginning. And it says in 1:1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Well, as we know, that this is not the beginning. It's just a beginning. This is a beginning, the creation of the physical universe that we see before us today. That's what Genesis 1:1 talks about. That's when God created the original dirt. Let's see where the real beginning is. Let's turn to John 1:1. John 1:1 talks about a real beginning before the creation of the physical heavens and earth. John 1:1. And it says, in the beginning was the Word. And we know here that it's talking about the Word, who was Christ. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, and all things were made through Him. And without Him, nothing was made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. I'd like to read that in the Amplified version of the Bible, because I think it brings a few things kind of clear. The Amplified version, John 1:1, says, in the beginning, before all time, was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. This is the true beginning. The true beginning before there was time, before there was physical. Let's turn to Revelation 4, 8 through 11. Because we'll see a little bit more about how great God is as far as His existence. Revelation 4, 8 through 11. This is talking about a vision that John had of the very throne of God the Father in heaven. Revelation 4, verse 8 says, the four living creatures, which having six wings, were full of eyes around and within. And they do not rest day or night, saying, holy, 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 Lord God Almighty, who was and is to come. Whenever the living creatures gave glory and honor and thanks to Him who sits on the throne, who lives forever and ever. The 24 elders fall down before Him who sits on the throne and worship Him who lives forever and ever, and cast their crowns before the throne, saying, you are worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they exist and were created. Three times in this set of verses, it reminds us and tells us that God has always existed and will always exist. This is one of the great attributes of our God. He's always existed, and He will always exist. Nothing physical can say that. You and I, we can't say that. This building can't say that. This earth can't say that. This universe can't say that. But God can say that. You know, no matter how hard I try, I really can't comprehend that. You know, how do you comprehend forever in the past and forever in the future? It's pretty difficult to comprehend. You know, as a young child, I remember thinking, because I had nobody around me who was really sick or who had died, I remember thinking, oh, no problem thinking about living into the future forever. I was young and healthy and a strapping teenage boy. I could take on anything. But you know, you still can't think of forever in the past. We all have a beginning. That's pretty hard to comprehend. But as it says in Isaiah 55, 9, and you don't need to turn there, for as heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. God's mind works differently than our mind. It works on a totally different level than what our human minds think of, a level that understands things which we really don't understand or are very difficult for us to understand. Let's go back to creation. In the beginning there was God, and there was the Word who would become Christ. At some point in the past, as Genesis 1:1 says, the earth and planets and galaxies and stars were all created. And other heavenly bodies were created also. And the angels were created. He created all of them. But you know, He not only created these bodies, but He also created the physical laws that go with them, that allow them to exist. Because when there was nothing physical here, He didn't have to have these laws to exist. About 2 months ago, I received something in the mail. It's a magazine I subscribe to. It's called Science Illustrated. And in this issue, they had an interesting article that I thought I would read to you. It talks about the universe, and it's a pretty much a typical science magazine. You know, it goes through the evolution and thinks of everything from that point of view. But in an article called The Universe's 10 Greatest Mysteries by Halley and Henrik Stubb, there's an entry, number 7, of one of the 10 greatest mysteries of the universe. Number 7 is, are the laws of nature accidental? Are these laws that God created for the physical world accidental? And they say, because they're trying to think this through as to how we can figure this out, they say, what do we know? We aren't sure how to confirm why the laws of nature exist as they do, but there are three possibilities. Three possibilities they come up with. The first is the universe was created intentionally and fine-tuned to support life. However, this is a religious, not scientific view, which then they go ahead and say, let's go on to point 2 and point 3, which are other possibilities. But their conclusion in that point is, can we get an answer? Will they ever be able to determine the answer to this? Even if a theory of everything were successfully established, it would probably not solve the problem. Thus, it is doubtful whether science as we know it can predict or provide an answer. To me, that's basically saying there's only one answer, and that's that it was intentionally created. That God created this universe and the laws that are around it. Let's turn to Job, the book of Job. Now, in the book of Job, we know that Satan wanted to cause Job to sin, wanted to cause Job to curse God. And Satan asked God if he could have Job in his hands and do whatever he wanted. And God allowed Satan to do virtually everything he wanted to be able to do with Job, because God had a purpose in mind for Job. In Job 36, Job's older friends try to convince Job that he's sinning and that the punishment that he's going through from God was because of his sins. But Elihu, the youngest of Job's friends, perceives that Job is laying the blame on God and begins to remind Job of the greatness of God. In verse 24 through 26 of Job 36, we read, and Elihu's telling Job these things, remember to magnify his works, his work, of which men have sung. Everyone has seen it. Man looks on it from afar. You know, man really can't see all of the wonders and greatness of God and the magnificence of God in so many areas. Scientists are just beginning to see that. They're beginning to see the great wonders of the universe. But we know that, as it says in 1 Corinthians 13, that we see through a glass darkly. And even man sees that when they look at this universe. They see through a glass darkly. They are unable to see everything. Verse 26, behold, God is great, and we do not know him, nor can the number of his years be discovered. God's eternal, as we saw earlier. You know, we often talk about somebody being middle age. What is middle age to God? Probably right now. He's halfway between eternity in the past and eternity in the future. So God, I guess, is always middle age. Let's turn to Job 37, 5 through 7. We find that God controls the forces of earth, the rain and the snow. Job 37, 5 God thunders marvelously with His voice. He does great things which we cannot comprehend. For He says to the snow, fall on the earth. Likewise to the gentle rain and the heavy rain of its strength. Down in verse 17, we see that He controls the wind. Verse 18, we see He controls the atmosphere. Let's go ahead and turn to chapter 38, verse 1. Because now God answers Job. 38, verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. I don't know if you remember the story, but Satan caused the death of all of Job's sons and daughters by having a great wind come up and destroy the building they were in. And yet God shows Job here that He has control over the wind. He speaks out of a whirlwind. He's reminding Job that He has full control over everything. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone? You know, if I was Job at this point, I think I'd feel pretty small. Pretty small. Job probably did great building projects, but nothing like this earth. So just to see the greatness of this earth, the greatness of this wonderful body that we live on, let's take a little bit of a look at it. The earth is 25,000 miles around at the equator. It's covered by 71% with water. In pounds, it weighs 13 with 24 zeros after it. I'm going to be talking about huge numbers here. God works in huge numbers. These are incredibly large numbers. But yet, God works in those numbers. He's that great. You know, you may want to actually write down in your paper to get an idea of some of these numbers. 1 billion is a one with nine zeros after it. I'm going to be talking about numbers that are so large that I'm not even going to say the name of them. I'm not sure science has a name for them. But that's the realm God works in. That's how great He is. This earth is so large, yet God put it at the exact distance it needs to be from the sun. That sun is the exact size it needs to be, the exact power it needs to be to give the exact amount of light and heat that this earth needs to grow crops and for animals to live and for humans to live. He gave the earth just the right amount of water, carbon, oxygen, and gravity and other characteristics to sustain human life. Let's return back to Job 38, verse 31. Because God is continuing to talk about His great creation here to Job. Verse 31, can you bind the cluster of the Pleiades or loose the belt of Orion? Can you bring out Nazareth in its season? God put these in wonderful objects in the sky for mankind, for humankind, for seasons, and let us know the times. Verse 32, or can you guide the great bear with its cubs? Now, the great bear with its cubs is actually Arcturus, which is the fourth brightest star in the sky. Verse 33, do you know the ordinances of the heaven? Can you set their dominions over the earth? Now, let's just take a quick look at some of those magnificence of those bodies, those heavenly bodies that God's talking about here. These same heavens that we should be inspired about as we look at those in a night sky. Just as David did. Let's turn to Psalms 8:3. Psalms 8:3, David had something to say about these heavens. As a young shepherd, David probably spent many nights out contemplating the majesty of the sky above him. Psalms 8:3, when I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him, or the Son of Man that you visit him? And I'm sure David was quite humbled when he'd look up at that sky at night and see the glory that God had built above. Psalms 147, verse 4 and 5. We see some of the greatness of God in relation to these stars in the sky. Psalms 147, verse 4 and 5. Because God knows how many stars there are and how many and all their names. Verse 4, He counts the number of the stars. He calls them all by name. Great is our Lord and mighty in power. His understanding is infinite. His understanding is infinite. Have you ever sat out underneath the stars, maybe out in the desert or out in the wilderness someplace or back in the country someplace and just looked up at the sky? Can you imagine even trying to count those yourself? I mean, it's just so beautiful and so awesome. And there's so many of those. You know, and God builds on that kind of scale, that incredible scale. It's estimated that the size of the observable universe, that's what we can see with our instruments, is somewhere between 30 billion and 78 billion, not miles, but light years. Between 30 billion and 78 billion light years in size. If we dig way back into our history when we were in school and try to bring up these numbers of what a light year is, that's how long light travels in 1 year. 1 year, that's how long light travels in 1 year. Light travels at 186,000 miles per second. 186,000 miles per second, not per year, which I might be able to understand, comprehend. Not a minute, not an hour, but a second. So one light year is almost 6 trillion miles. So multiply 6 trillion miles by 30 to 78 billion, and you get how big this universe is. It is really huge. That actually equals out to 27 followed by 22 zeros at the end of it. That's how large this is, one side to the other side of the universe. And yet, God sees it all. God knows it all. God understands it all. God built it all. You know, sometimes it's hard to grasp these numbers. So sometimes I try to think, well, okay, maybe I understand a second. You know, how long is a second? Okay, that's pretty fast. If you take 1 million seconds, that's 11 days ago. If you take a billion seconds, that goes back 32 years to 1980. If you take a trillion seconds, and you might think, well, that's got to be around Columbus time, or maybe the time of Christ, maybe the time of the flood. No, a trillion seconds is 32,000 years ago. 6 trillion seconds, that's how long it takes, or how far light would travel. Miles in 1 year goes back to 180,000 years ago. For 1 second for each mile. Now, if you're like I was when I was gathering all this information, my head started swirling right here. I'm starting to think these things are so large. But that's the way God is. That's the way God is. And I sometimes also try to think of things of how fast would it be if, when I think of the trips I've taken through my life. For this feast, I've traveled to Sydney, Australia. It took us 18 hours of actual flying time to get there. 18 hours of flying to Sydney. It's about 9,400 miles as a crow flies. Of course, as you know, planes don't fly as a crow. We were traveling at about 550 miles an hour. It seemed like a long flight, a really long flight. But if I had flown at the speed of light, I'm there. In fact, it took me longer to snap my fingers than to get there by the speed of light. If I had traveled at that 550 miles an hour, it would have taken me 20 years to get there. At the speed of the airplane. It would take me 20 years to get to the sun. If the sun is 93 million miles away, it takes light 8 minutes to get here. If I fly there with an airplane at 550 miles an hour, it would take me 20 years to get there. So that's how fast light is. Now, some other things man's done is man launched in 1977 the Voyager spacecraft. It's flying at 30,000 miles an hour. After 35 years, it's only made it a couple of billion miles away. And yet, this universe just keeps going on and on, and it's so great. The nearest star to the Earth is Alpha Centauri. It's about 27 trillion miles away from us. And at 186,000 miles per second, it takes light 4 years to get to us. And beyond our galaxies, there are billions of other galaxies, some bigger than ours, some smaller than ours. Now, how many stars are in the universe? A recent article by Charles Choi that was published in space.com says that our galaxy has about 400 billion stars in it. That's just the Milky Way. If you counted a star every second, it would take you 12,000 years to count that. The article goes on to say that galaxies can hold up to 1 trillion stars. That's a 1 with 12 zeros after it. And the best estimate of the number of stars in the universe is 3 with 23 zeros after it. If you had all your friends on this Earth, all 7 billion of them, counting at 1 star a second, it would take the whole Earth 22,700 years to count the number of stars there are in this universe. And that's our guesstimate as to how many there are. But you know, God knows the name of every single one of those. Every single one of those, God knows the name. And He knows the count. So let's take a quick look at the two largest stars that man can see out there. The two largest stars that man can see. The first one is Betelgeuse. Betelgeuse. It's 180,000 times larger or brighter than the sun. It is so large that 252 trillion Earths would fit inside of it. We're talking massive. And again, God works in these massive sizes. If Betelgeuse was here for our sun, we wouldn't be here. It would wipe everything out through Mars. That would all be gone. That's how big this is. The largest star astronomers have yet found is called Canis Majoris. Its diameter is over 1.7 billion miles. And over 9.2 billion suns, not Earths, could fit inside of it. Over 9.2 billion suns. If you place that star where our sun is right now, it would wipe all of us out, Mars, all the way out through Saturn. It is so large. There wouldn't be much left of us. I've got an Earth here, something that represents an Earth. It's about an inch and a half, this one is, about an inch and a half in diameter. If this is an inch and a half in diameter, our sun would be 14 feet wide. This large star that we have, Canis Majoris, would be 6 miles across. This is the Earth. Our sun is 14 feet across. This large star would be 6 miles across. That's how large we're talking about, how magnificent this truly is. You know, God, again, keeps track of this whole vast universe, this huge universe, because He has a mind, He has a memory, He has intellect that's so superior to ours to understand all of this. Let's turn to Psalms 145. Psalms 145, verse 17 and 18. Find that God tells the number of the stars. He calls them all by names. You know, sometimes when I meet somebody new, within 3 minutes after talking to them, I forget their name. And yet God knows the name of all these stars with all these zeros behind it. Great is our Lord and great power. His understanding is infinite. Not only does God know the number of all the stars and all their names, but you know that every single day, 275 million stars die and 275 million stars are born. God's got to come up with 275 million new names each day. How many new parents can come up with a name for their child in 9 months? It's a difficult task. And yet God does this 275 million times a day. He knows all the names. You know, that leads to a discussion of the mind of God, which is just so vastly superior to us. So vastly superior to our minds. You know, how do you think our minds compare to God's mind? And how does God's mind even compare to one of our greatest inventions that man's ever done? And that's the computer. Well, let's turn to Matthew 10. Matthew 10, verse 29 through 33. Christ is talking here. Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin, and not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will? But the very hairs of your head are numbered. Do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. And a copper coin really wasn't worth much back then. It really isn't worth much now. And yet, we're so important that even something that's what we would consider worthless, God still is tracking. He still knows it's there. It's still important to Him. I've often thought, how could God know how many hairs are on our head? Well, He does. I truly believe He does. I truly believe He does. Verse 32. Therefore, whoever confesses me before men, him I will also confess before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, him I will also deny before my Father who is in heaven. Now, not only is God able to keep track of all these stars, and as they're created, as they die, these stars, the whole universe, how many sparrows there are, how many hairs on the top of your head, but He knows us intimately and knows what we're feeling and what we're saying. That's how great our God is. He knows everything about us. You know, an infinite God may not be able to do that, or a finite God may not be able to do that, but an infinite God can. An infinite God can hear all of us individually. Again, do we often think of God as just a million times bigger than us, smarter than us, a billion times, a trillion times, you know, or whatever number of zeros behind it? Do we think of God as just that much smarter and bigger than we are? Well, that's again putting God in a physical realm. He is beyond that. We can't just do that. You know, it's kind of like babies. If you have a 1-year-old, they can't comprehend things an adult can. Their mind hasn't matured. It isn't capable of doing that. We can only grasp at these things, but we can have a difficult time understanding them. Let's turn to Isaiah 55, verse 8. Learn a little bit more about God's mind. Isaiah 55, 8. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, says the Lord. God's mind works differently than ours. You know, can humans build a computer that's smarter than God? Can humans build computers that are more powerful than the mind of God? Computers keep getting faster and faster. They keep being able to hold more and more information. You know, I began working in computers in 1981. I've got a friend who's actually visiting us today, Van Baker, who worked with me in that time too. We worked with a computer, it's called an IBM Mainframe 370 Model 158. You could add two numbers together at the speed of 1 million adds or subtractions a second. It could store 4 million alphabetic letters or numbers in its memory at a time. It was an incredible piece of equipment at that time. And we had hard drives that were the size of washing machines. And we thought, wow, these were great. Each one of those washing machines could hold 100 million characters on it. 100 million characters, and it could be accessed instantly. I was a tour guide at the time out in Ambassador College or at Worldwide Church of God at the time, and I remember taking people on tours and telling them about this wonderful piece of equipment here that could do all this. You know, how does that compare to today? Well, I wrote this sermon on an older computer. It has 200 or 2,000 times the memory that old mainframe had. It runs, this new older computer I have, runs at 4.4 billion times faster than that computer did in 1981. Its disk drives hold more than 450 times what that one did back in 1981. Yet that mainframe cost millions of dollars. My laptop cost about $500 and sat in my lap. And that mainframe took a whole room. You know, let's stretch our minds a little bit more. You know, where is man going with computers? The U.S. is hoping to shortly build the first what they call exaflop computer. They hope to have that done by 2018. An exaflop computer runs at speeds of 1,000 trillion additions or subtractions a second. That's 1,000 trillion. Now, if we put this back into human terms, if you had every single person on this planet, all 7 billion of them, doing a simple math problem, 40 hours or straight, over 40 hours, it could do what this computer can do in 1 second. That's how fast this is. You know, and most computers these days supercomputers are getting very close to what scientists believe is about the same speed as what the human brain runs at and what the human brain can store. And if mankind continues in the way that it is going, he'll be able to build a computer that is much smarter than we are as humans, as far as just capabilities. And we'll start moving into the realm of the Terminator movies. We truly will. And that's actually the moment when a lot of scientists even today are talking about, the moment of what they call singularity. Singularity. And I'll read about that from a document called Judgment Day, Religious Movement or New Period of Rapid Evolution, What is Singularity? By Brian Rogozinski, published in October 26, 2009, in laymanstech.com. And this is going to be a little bit scientific. I tried to find the most readable version of this, and you know scientists, they can never get anything that's reasonable or readable, it seems. Singularity is the theory coined by renowned futurist Ray Kurzweil. Paraphrased in its simplest form is as follows. The functionality of the human brain is quantifiable in terms of technology that we can build in the near future. So they think this is coming in the near future. When artificial intelligence, computers, has a capacity to think like we humans do, when that time comes, it will be able to access its own design and rapidly redesign itself. Essentially, the evolutionary process would be sped up at an exponential rate, and artificial intelligence would soar past human brain processing capability. Artificial intelligence would take over all further development at such an alarming rate, humans would not even be able to comprehend what was going on. This article continues to talk about mapping out the processes of the brain so that we can begin to write computer programs that mimic our human brains, the capacities, the capabilities, and the functions. It then goes on to say, once the brain has been mapped, this makes room for other cool, what they call cool applications, like mind uploading. Mind uploading is essentially the ability to upload your thoughts to a computer for later retrieval. If this happens, the consciousness of an individual human mind could be literally saved. And therefore, it would exist forever, at least at a conscious level. Now, this is not me talking. This is actually this scientist discussing this. In other words, scientists feel that they will be able to create computers that will think better and faster than humans, and we will eventually take over the creative process that humans are doing, that only we as humans can do. And they'll eventually be able to create computers that are able to read your very mind, be able to think like you, be able to act like you, know what you would do in situations, and actually be you. in effect, what they're saying is you will be able to be saved to a hard drive and reloaded to a computer, and it will become you. So man is thinking about immortality in their own way. And you might think, wow, okay, this is someplace way off in the future. Well, they're actually thinking sometime around 2040. It's only about 30 years from now. About 2040. You know, I've got a cell phone here. You know, it's pretty small and everything. It's actually probably got more computing power and everything else than that mainframe did back in 1981. But in that article, it continues, and it says, Kurzweil likes to point out that your average cell phone is about a millionth of the size of, a millionth of the price of, and a thousand times more powerful than the computer he had at MIT 40 years ago. Realizing the huge changes in the last 40 years, flip forward 40 years. And what does the world look like? Now, this is, again, according to this article. If you really want to try to figure that out, you need to think very, very outside the box. Very, very outside the box. But you know, when we get a look at computers and what mankind is saying computers are going to be like in the future, God is so much greater than that. So if you think, wow, these are great, man can do all this stuff, God is so far ahead of that. And that's why I feel God knows every hair on our head. God knows our every thought. God cares for us personally because he is so far advanced to what this is. So far advanced. So far surpasses all the power of all of that. You know, we've seen the greatness of God in his creation through the universe. I've spent a little time talking about computers and the greatness that man is going towards. And yet how God's mind is so far advanced to that, so far greater than that. But you know, God has other sides to his greatness. There's other things besides the universe. God's in the big things, but he's also in the small things. He's not only in the hard things, but he's in the soft things. He's got great intellect and power, and he also has great love and mercy. Turn with me to Psalms 40, verse 5. Psalms 40, verse 5. We can learn a little bit about what God thinks about us and cares about us. Psalms 40, verse 5. Many, O Lord, my God, are your wonderful works which you have done, and your thoughts toward us cannot be recounted to you in order. If I would declare and speak them, they are more than can be enumbered. Is it possible that God knows you so well and he thinks about you that much that you can't even number the thoughts? That is how God is so great. He thinks and sees us in a very personal nature. God works at a very personal level and cares for each and every one of us. And that is his greatness. Let me tell you a story that happened to my wife and I years ago when we were first married that to me brought to my mind how great God truly is as far as just his personal care about us. Shortly after my wife and I were married, we moved to Houston, Texas. And prior to that, we were in college together, and we were married and we were together 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We worked together, we went to school together. We did everything together. And then we moved after a year of marriage to Houston, Texas. And the job I had took me away from the house from 4 in the morning till 9 at night. And that was so drastic of a change to us. And we were quite poor at the time. And we couldn't afford the gas to drive, so I had to ride with my boss to work and back. And that's why it took so long going to and from work. And after 4 days, my wife and I were out walking in the evening. And for some reason, I'd gotten home a little bit earlier that night, and it was still light out. And as we were walking, we were talking about God, and we were talking about our life and how much we enjoyed being together and loved each other. And we said, boy, it's Friday tomorrow. Wouldn't it be nice if Boy, if I just had $1 more, I could get enough gas to take me to work and back. $1 would do it. That's all I needed. And we thought about it, and we talked more, and on our way back, we covered the exact same ground, and there in the dirt was $1. And I was able to go and drive and get back for the Sabbath and enjoy the time together with my wife. And God didn't have to answer that. But God cares that much. That's how great He is. God cares that much that He does not only those things He needs to do, but He does those things that shows care to us and that He wants to do. You know, that's how great God is. He not only knows the name of every single star as they come to life and die. All those, well, stars with all the zeros behind them. But God knows when every single sparrow falls. And He knows everything that we need, everything that we desire. God is our personal Father and our personal friend. And that is part of God's greatness. He truly is great. You know, I'd like to sum up the greatness of God in our lives. We find that God is omnipotent, having all power, so He can accomplish whatever He desires. Psalms 115, verse 3. He is omniscient, having all knowledge. Psalms 147, 5. So He knows everything and knows what is best for us. He is present everywhere, omnipresent. So He is always there with us, especially during our trials. Psalms 139, 7 through 12, Jeremiah 23, 24. God is eternal, so His existence has no beginning or end, and we can know that He will always be there. Isaiah 44, 6, Revelation 1, 8. God does not change, so we know that we can always rely on Him. Psalms 55, verse 19. God is infinite. God has infinite love because God is love. 1 John 4:8. And God has great mercy and forgiveness when we repent of our sins. Psalms 103. When we stretch our minds, we find that God truly is almighty, all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-caring. So yes, as humans, we are bound to picture God in a way that does limit Him. But let's try to stretch our minds and see Him as what He really is. So how great is your God? He's pretty great. In 1715, King Louis XVI of France died after a reign of 72 years. He had called himself the Great, and was the monarch who made the famous statement, "I am the state." His court was the most magnificent in Europe, and his funeral was equally spectacular. As his body lay in state in a golden coffin, orders were given that the cathedral should be very dimly lit, with only a special candle set above his coffin, to dramatize his greatness. At the memorial, thousands waited in hushed silence. Then the bishop began to speak, and slowly reached down. He snuffed out the candle, and he said, "Only God is great. Only God is great. Only God is truly great." What an awesome God He is.